It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Thursday the 11th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. This week is Computer Science Education Week, and a lot of people are trying their hand at coding as part of something called the Hour of Code, where people are being asked to commit at least an hour to the exercise, organized by a largely tech company-funded organization called Code.org, which estimates millions of people will be doing this in the classroom, at home. Apple stores are hosting hour-long workshops today. President Obama even got on YouTube to advocate for kids getting involved. Marketplace's Adrian Hill from our tech and education project Learning Curve is here with more. Hi, Adrian.
Hey, Ben.
All right. So I've played with a little C++ in my day.
That's way better than me.
But I'm definitely, I would call myself a coding rube. So how about you? Did you play around?
I did go through the Hour of Code lesson this week to check it out, the Angry Bird themed one. And I was able to code my way into crushing a few evil green pigs. That's the sound of my success there, Ben.
Oh, man. Sounds very successful. Sounded like you crushed a lot of pigs.
A lot of pigs. It did feel a little bit more like a video game than any actual like hard brain coding work, I'll say.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Why do teachers and schools think it's worth devoting class time to crushing evil green pigs, or are they trying to do something else?
In some ways, what this Hour of Code really teaches kids is how to think in a coding language and think in this way. There also is this practical reason. You know, anxious parents out there want to know that their kids are going to get a job, and there are going to be a lot of computer science jobs in the future. And then the last reason is the sense that I've heard from some people that it's worth teaching kids that they're the ones that control the computers and not vice versa.
I understand there might be a little bit of skepticism about this since it's being funded by tech companies, right?
Yeah, it's at least being funded mostly by tech companies, and there is skepticism. There are people who say, look, we shouldn't be using our schools as training grounds for these computer science engineers these companies want to hire in the future. I think there's also just a sense, look, like these companies or some of these companies stand to benefit if every school in the country introduces computer science programs.
Marketplace's Adrian Hill. Adrian, thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
While coding kids hone their chops, coding adults are pushing out new apps into what companies hope is a growth area, business. Former rivals Apple and IBM announced a new partnership recently, and this week the companies put out 10 new apps for things like making it so the cable guy's visit can be at a specific time instead of between 12 and 4. Another one is called Passenger Plus. IBM Global Business Services VP Catherine White says the app is designed to let people on delayed flights adjust itineraries with the help of iPad-toting flight attendants.
And then when the passenger has Wi-Fi, whatever kind of device they may have, they're able to then download the boarding pass and bypass the whole process on the next leg of the journey.
The big question, whether companies will buy Apple's devices and IBM's applications. Marketplace has been on the air for 25 years, and that couldn't have happened without the support from listeners like you. So please make a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today and help us keep our coverage relevant and compelling. And you should know that your gift in any amount counts twice, thanks to a dollar-for-dollar match from the Candida Fund. Donate at marketplace.org by December 31st and help us reach our goal of at least 2,500 donors. Thanks for your support. Unless you're talking about stacking the paper from investors to bring it to a valuation of $40 billion, good news about ride-hailing app Uber is hard to find this week. Just in the past few days, banned in New Delhi, in Spain, in Thailand, sued in Los Angeles and San Francisco for misleading charging practices and background checks for drivers. Uber's contention has been that its business practices are better than those of the industry it's disrupting at a breakneck speed. But reporting on those claims suggests it's not that cut and dry. We talked to New York Times tech reporter Mike Isaac about Uber a few weeks back. Time for a check-in. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Can you talk a little bit about these background checks for drivers? That is seeming to be an issue not only here in the States, but in Delhi, in New Delhi, where there was an accusation of rape. Where does the company stand in this regard?
Essentially, Uber claims that they have the safest background checks in the industry. And state representatives in California, Colorado, Chicago, DC are all saying that they're being disingenuous. That's not true. Uber does not use a specific type of fingerprint background check that many taxi and limousine drivers are forced to undergo in order to get their license. So that's the funny thing. Uber has not given a real definitive answer here. They just say that they use their own private contracted services, and Uber claims that it's more comprehensive than a fingerprint-based background check, but many people are taking issue against that claim.
Why haven't some of the other ride-sharing companies, Lyft, Sidecar, et cetera, faced the same level of scrutiny that Uber has?
To be honest, Uber is the winner right now. They have the biggest war chest, they're in the most places, and they seem to be the most aggressive in trying to push into new markets. So they're the ones with big target on their backs.
Yeah, it's tough to be the king, I guess.
Exactly.
What would it take for you to stop being bullish about this company achieving its goals despite all of the backlash and the bad press and the difficulties it's had with municipalities around the world?
I think it would take some serious regulation, probably on a national level, at least in the United States, to inhibit Uber from operating. Honestly, the thing that keeps Uber so popular is that it's more convenient in a lot of circumstances for regular people. You just can't stop Uber because they have too many employees and too many people wanting the service. So it seems like we're going to have it whether we want it or not at some point.
New York Times tech reporter Mike Isaac. Mike, thank you, man.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
And quickly, before we go, what Facebook-owned social network service has 300 million users these days? You guessed it, Instagram, or as the kids call it, Insta, IG, whatever you call it. It's now bigger than Twitter. You can find me there, handle the Brock Johnson. And that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.